In this episode of the Wilderness and Wellness podcast, I talk about the value of goose music as proposed by Aldo Leopold and discuss our duty as inheritors of the earth to preserve wild places and wild things for future generations. Stay tuned. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Wilderness and Wellness podcast. I'm your host, Ron Wallin. This podcast is an exploration of the ways that people can reconnect to the natural world through bushcraft, naturalist skills, and time spent immersed in the nature they find around and within them. We also discuss how this reconnection can increase our individual well-being and that of our communities and the earth. Thank you for joining me. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, my friends. Welcome to another episode of the Wilderness and Wellness Podcast, and I'm your host, Ron Wallin. And today, we will be talking to Mr. Aldo Leopold. Sadly, not in the flesh, because Mr. Leopold died some time ago, but we are going to be consulting one of his great works, the greatest of his works, I would say, A Sand County Almanac. So, for those who may not be familiar with Mr. Leopold, a little bit of an introduction on him from the Aldo Leopold Foundation website. So Aldo Leopold is considered by many to be the father of wildlife ecology and the United States' wilderness system. Aldo Leopold was a conservationist, a forester, philosopher, educator, writer, and outdoor enthusiast. And among his best-known ideas is the land ethic, which calls for an ethical, caring relationship between people and nature. A prolific author of articles for both professional journals and popular magazines, Leopold conceived of a book geared for general audiences, which would examine humanity's relationship to the natural world. Unfortunately, just 1 week after receiving word that his manuscript would be published, Leopold died of a heart attack on April 21st, 1948. A little more than a year after his death, Leopold's collection of essays, known as A Sand County Almanac, was published. And of this work, Leopold himself said, quote, "There are some who can live without wild things and some who cannot. These essays are the delights and dilemmas of one who cannot." So that's just a little bit about Mr. Leopold and his seminal work, A Sand County Almanac. I first read this actually not too long ago. Sand County Almanac, it's an amazing, amazing collection of essays and very timely, even now. It was written, you know, back in the 40s, mid-late 40s, and maybe even before that as he collected these works and refined them, and then was published, of course, in 1949. But the messages in it are just as timely today. And, you know, this was before the era of our understanding of climate change and whatnot, but definitely not before the devastating losses of species and the things that were going on with the extirpation of alpha predators and whatnot. And Aldo Leopold was right in the thick of all of that as a professional, you know, as a forester, as a an ecologist, so on and so forth. And again, he really is considered the father of the modern wildlife conservation movement. And so this, the messages in this book are just as timely today, if not more so. So I'm going to delve a little bit into a particular essay of his called Goose Music. And this essay really deals with what we have today in terms of understanding our relationship with the wild things in the natural world and what is at stake if we continue our present course. And so I just kind of want to go over that a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and just dive right in. Because this work is such a classic, there's been many printings of it. The one I have is, looks like it was printed in 1966. And it's got a photograph on the cover of what looks like the rising sun with some geese flying over, which is ironic considering our topic today. But of goose music, that is. So anyways, I'm going to go ahead and get into it. And if you have a copy, feel free to follow along. If not, just enjoy the listen. And on this edition, I'm on page 226 under Goose Music, and I'm starting in the third paragraph. And so, just to start off in this chapter, understand that Mr. Leopold is speaking, mostly to hunters and fishermen and women. But the things that he says very, very much apply to anyone that has any interest in the outdoors, in the natural world. So we'll be kind of going over that as well. So in the third paragraph we start, we have realized dimly, of course, that a day afield was good for the tired businessman. We have also realized that the destruction of wildlife removed the incentive for days afield. But we have not yet learned to express the value of wildlife in terms of social welfare. Some have attempted to justify wildlife conservation in terms of meat, others in terms of personal pleasure, others in terms of cash, and still others in the interest of science, education, agriculture, art, public health, and even military preparedness. So just to interrupt for a moment. So, you know, when he lists those things, he's really talking about the value that we place on wild things, I believe, from a Western societal perspective. But then he goes on to kind of differentiate from that. He says, but few have so far clearly realized and expressed the whole truth, namely that all these things are but factors in a broad social value, and that wildlife is a social asset. But to those whose hearts are stirred by the sound of whistling wings and quacking mallards, wildlife is something even more than this. He goes on to talk about golf a little bit. It says, golf is a sophisticated exercise, but the love of hunting is almost a physiological characteristic. And again, he's talking about hunting, but I would say the love of the natural world could easily replace that for those who are not hunters. A man may not care for golf and still be human, but the man who does not like to see, hunt, photograph, or otherwise outwit birds or animals is hardly normal. He is super civilized, and I, for one, do not know how to deal with him. Babes do not tremble when they are shown a golf ball, but I should not like to own the boy whose hair does not lift his hat when he sees his first deer. We are dealing, therefore, with something that lies very deep. And so here Leopold touches on this aspect that we've talked about previously in terms of what might be considered biophilia, or the love of living things, the love of the natural world that seems to be deeply entrenched within us as people due to our evolutionary heritage. So that's kind of what he's touching on here, that, you know, golf and all these other sports and things that we as people have devised over time is great, but it pales in comparison to our natural affinity for amazing, beautiful, wild, natural things. He goes on to say, if wild birds and animals are a social asset, how much of an asset are they? It is easy to say that some of us, afflicted with the hereditary hunting fever, cannot live satisfactory lives without them. But this does not establish any comparative value, and in these days, it is sometimes necessary to choose between necessities. In short, what is a wild goose worth? I have a ticket to the symphony. It was not cheap. The dollars were well spent, but I would forego the experience for the sight of a big gander that sailed honking into my decoys at daybreak this morning. It was bitter cold, and I was all thumbs, so I blithely missed him. But miss or no miss, I saw him. I heard the wind whistle through his set wings as he came honking out of the gray west, and I felt him so that even now I tingle at the recollection. I think many of us can relate to that, as we've had our own experiences with wildlife in the outdoors. He continues, I doubt not that this very gander has given 10 other men a symphony ticket's worth of thrills. My notes tell me I have seen 1,000 geese this fall. Every one of these, in the course of their epic journey from the Arctic to the Gulf, has on one occasion or another probably served man in some equivalent of paid entertainment. One flock, perhaps, has thrilled a score of schoolboys and sent them scurrying home with tales of high adventure. Another, passing overhead of a dark night, has serenaded a whole city with goose music and awakened who knows what questionings and memories and hopes. A third, perhaps, has given pause to some farmer at his plow and brought new thoughts of far lands and journeyings and peoples where before was only drudgery, barren of any thought at all. I am sure those 1,000 geese are paying human dividends on a dollar value. Worth in dollars is only an exchange value, like the sale value of a painting or the copyright of a poem. What about the replacement value? Supposing there were no longer any paintings or poetry or goose music. It is a black thought to dwell upon, but it must be answered. In dire necessity, somebody might write another Iliad or paint an Angelus, but fashion a goose? Quote, I, the Lord, will answer them. The hand of the Lord hath done this, and the Holy One of Israel created it. Goes on, saying, what value has wildlife from the standpoint of morals and religion? I heard of a boy once who was brought up an atheist. He changed his mind when he saw that there were 100-odd species of warblers, each bedeckled like to the rainbow, and each performing yearly sundry thousands of miles of migration, about which scientists wrote wisely, but did not understand. No, quote, fortuitous concourse of elements, end quote, working blindly through any number of millions of years could quite account for why warblers are so beautiful. No mechanistic theory, even bolstered by mutations, has ever quite answered for the colors of the Carolian warbler, or the vespers of the wood thrush, or the swan song, or goose music. I dare say this boy's convictions would be harder to shake than those of many inductive theologians. He continues on, saying, the point is that some 6 or 8 million of Americans like to hunt and fish, or bird or track, I might add, or go out and enjoy a hike, backpack, stop doing a little bushcraft session and having some tea, whatever. I digress. The point is that some 6 or 8 million of Americans like to hunt and fish, that the hunting fever is endemic in the race, that the race is benefited by any incentive to get out into the open, and is being injured by the destruction of the incentive in this case. To combat this destruction is therefore a social issue. To conclude, I have congenital hunting fever and 3 sons. As little tots, they spent their time playing with my decoys and scouring vacant lots with wooden guns. I hope to leave them good health and education, and possibly even a competence. But what are they going to do with these things if there be no more deer in the hills, and no more quail in the coverts, no more snipe whistling in the meadow, no more piping of widgeons and chattering of teal as darkness covers the marshes, no more whistling of swift wings when the morning stars pale in the east, and when the dawn wind stirs through the ancient cottonwoods and the gray light steals down from the hills over the old river, sliding softly past its wide brown sandbars. What if there be no more goose music? My friends, what if there be no more goose music? We have an amazing heritage that has been handed down to us. Much of it has been trampled, much of it has been destroyed, so to speak, as we've inherited it in this day and age. But it's come down through millions and even hundreds of thousands of years to us today. And we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to this earth, to ourselves, to our children. When you look at the traditional cultures around the world, those who do still live close to the land, there's a common thread among them. Almost all of them have obviously a very, very keen understanding of the natural world. And with that keen understanding, they tend to recognize that each being on this earth has a particular place, has a job, has a duty, has a specific niche that it fills. And those cultures tend to recognize that the purpose for which the Creator put humans on the earth was to be stewards and caretakers of the land. And we, in this modern Western society, unfortunately, have forgotten that. We have forgotten our role as stewards. And we've forgotten it because we have placed consumerism and the collection of things and of money above all else? And what are we sacrificing when we do that? We can make an extra dollar here and there, but there's no guarantee that that extra dollar or whatever it is that we acquire in this life will pass on to our children and our children's children and so on and so forth. Aldo Leopold, in his foreword to the Sand County Almanac, also said, quote, "We abuse the land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us. When we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect," end quote. And with that, I may ask, how are we lending our voice to this conversation, or are we? Are we standing idly by as this conversation moves on without our influence, as the rape and pillage of the land continues? We see so many things going on, the loss of species, the forest fires, the clearing of land for oil drilling, and all these crazy things. And right now, as we speak, the Amazon, you know, the forest, which provides, like, I think 16% of our oxygen on this earth, is ablaze. And simply so that farmers can have places to farm and have agriculture, and so that big companies can come in and drill. And these tribes down there are fighting for the Amazon. They're fighting for their forests. They're fighting for their indigenous rights, for their ability to continue on in their traditional ways. Because without that land, they can't do that. And that's what that's the precarious situation we find ourselves in, that we have so altered the land that it's not the same, and that it almost seems that without our continued rape and pillage of it, we would be at a loss. The land no longer produces the way it did before human beings came, before modern Western people came. You know, that we don't have the game that was once here. We don't have the fruits and the seeds and the nuts. You know, many of them have been wiped away or are no longer producing because the land is no longer actively managed like it was by traditional peoples. So it can no longer provide for us. But we can change that. We can do new things. I don't have all the answers. I don't claim to know exactly how we're going to change this. But as someone who does have children, who does have a love for natural things and wild places, I do see it as my responsibility to raise my voice as much as possible. And that's part of why I'm doing this podcast, to help spread the message, the good message of, one, getting in touch with the natural world, but also doing something about trying to save it. We need to instill a love of nature into those around us, first ourselves, and then to our families, and then to others as well. Because it is only with that love that one has a desire to change, that one has a desire to protect that which they love. Our children need to fall in love with the earth. Our children need to climb trees. They need to throw rocks. They need to go and swim and catch frogs and crawdads and blow the seed head off of a dandelion. All those things that we did as kids, they need to be able to do that too. You know, those of us who are 30 and older, and maybe even younger than that, 20 and older, we all know of places that we played at as kids, the haunts that we inhabited, the forts we built, the bows and arrows we made, and, you know, the trees that we cut down, not really knowing what we were doing, all these amazing experiences and things that we had as kids. When we think back on those places that we did those things, are they still there? That place, that tree that you sat in or under, that fort that you built by that stream, what does that place look like now? I hope it's still there, but I know for many of us, it isn't. And those are the changes that we need to raise our voices to and make different decisions in our own lives. And I'm not proposing any particular decisions. Whatever makes sense for you to do, do it. Another aspect that many traditional cultures had is that whenever they would make a decision on behalf of the community, They would do so with the thought of the children 7 generations from that time. And that's a tradition that comes to us from the Mohawk, from some other Native tribes in, here in the Native Americas. I think the Sam Bushmen, they also have that particular 7 generations from now decision-making process. What's our process? What are we making our decisions based on? Is it short-term profit, or is it based on whether our children get to have those same kinds of experiences that we had as kids, or our grandchildren, or our great-grandchildren, on down? Because we are each leaving a legacy in this life. We are each leaving a world behind. What kind of world is it? Is it a world with goose music? Or is it a world only with the sound of car engines, trains and airplanes, drilling machines, and all these other machinations that we have created and employed in the name of what we call progress? Is it progress? Is it progress when it rapes and pillages the land, when it destroys the very thing that supports us? And please don't get me wrong, I live a modern Western existence for the most part, much like many of you probably do. I live in a modern home with air conditioning and all those trappings of civilization. I don't know the answers again, but what are we doing? What can we do differently? And I don't know how to go from here. I'm as confused and downtrodden as many. All I know is we need something different. We need to do something different. We need to make different decisions, whether it's in our daily lives or in the choices we make with voting or whatever. And I'm not here to promote any one particular way of thing. I am not a megaphone for anyone or anything other than the wild, other than this earth and the natural world. And so I'm okay saying that I don't know the answers. And I'm also okay saying that I live a modern Western existence like many others, because I know so many of you do as well. And like I assume many of you are, I'm confused and lost and scared, and I'm not sure what to do other than to connect to the natural world, because I know that when I do that, I know that when I feel for it in my heart, just like my loved ones, I know that I will make different choices. I will make choices that will preserve it to the best of my ability and within my control and my, you know, what I can do. And so that's what I would beg each of you to deepen that connection with the natural world, to continue to seek out ways that you can do that. One of the ways that has been the best for me is a daily sit spot routine. Just knowing one place, picking one spot and going to it every day, whether it's for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, whatever. It can be a bench at a park, or you know, sitting against a tree in a park, or going to your local forest or whatever. And there's no real hard or fast rules of how you get a sit spot, but the number one thing is that you visit it often, daily if possible. That is the surest way to gaining a very deep connection with the natural world. Because when you go to that spot, you start learning the rhythms of it. You start seeing the behaviors of the animals and even the plants in that area. They start to get to know you and start to accept your presence. And you start building relationships. And with those relationships come a desire to care for that place and to care for the wide world of the wide natural world as well. So, you know, we'll get more into that in future episodes on sit spots and other ways to connect. But if there's something that you can do today, my recommendation would be to do that. So I'm going to sign off on this episode of the Wilderness and Wellness Podcast with a little bit of a sadder heart, just because this is kind of a sad topic, but also with hope, because I know that we can do this. I know that we have it within us to rise up and to protect and do the protect the things that we love and do the things that we know we need to do, whatever it is. We all have different talents and abilities and skills, and each of us can contribute to this work in some way or another. And even if it's just getting out for ourselves or taking our kids and our family out or whatever it is, taking friends out, it can be something super small or it can be something comparatively large and significant. Whatever, just get out, please, and do something for yourself and for the earth. So this is Ron signing off. Please feel free to leave feedback or questions or comments or whatever. This is an open conversation, and it's one that we need to have. We need to talk about these things, and I hope that this episode raises more questions than answers, because it's through the questions that we learn more information. It's through the questions that we dig deeper, and any tracker will tell you that. Question everything and let the questions lead and guide you. So please ask questions, leave comments, and let's continue this conversation, because there's a lot of work for us to do, and we can be led and guided in how to do it. But we have to do it together. One person can make a difference, but one person isn't going to fix this problem. It's going to take a whole society of people that have a deeper love for the natural world. If you want to send me an email, feel free to do so, ron@coyotespath.com. Leave messages or comments or questions on our Facebook page, Wilderness and Wellness Podcast. And I'll leave you with one more quote from a Sand County Almanac, which, by the way, I would highly recommend reading if you haven't already, or even rereading. And you can find a link to it in the show notes of this podcast. So I'll leave you with one more quote from Aldo Leopold from his essay, The Land Ethic, from a Sand County Almanac. He says, "Examine each question in terms of what is ethically and aesthetically right, as well as what is economically expedient. A thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise." We'll see you in the next episode.